everyone, and welcome to the Riffing on Realness podcast. I'm Carla Royal, a mindset and performance coach working with high-achieving entrepreneurs, and with me is Juliette Fay, a poet and three principles facilitator. If you are wrestling with how to be real in the midst of rampant superficiality, and it's causing you to overthink, be too guarded, and not live your potential, then you're in the right place. In this podcast, Juliette and I explore how dropping the masks, being real and vulnerable, can help us connect, adapt, and find a richness of experience amid the chaos. We're glad you're here, and we invite you to tune in, slow down, and listen for your own wisdom. Good morning, Juliette.
Good morning, Carla.
So we started this call with number one, me having some computer problems after I had just in the last month sent it in and spent $800 to get it fixed. And also, I have a bit of a sinus infection today and a crick in my shoulder. And so I don't feel well today. And we were just chatting about that. And we wanted today to talk about how do you show up when you're feeling bad? How do you do that?
Yes. Well, Carla, I was intrigued with something that you said, and I just felt it would be such a great topic to explore and for you really to share what you've discovered about what happens when you do show up, even though you're feeling lousy. So I'd love it if you can share what you shared with me, because it's gold dust.
Thank you. Well, what I've noticed, Juliette, is that it used to be back in the day that if I were feeling this poorly, that I would in all likelihood cancel some sessions for that day and maybe just go to bed. And of course, there's certainly times when that is absolutely the thing to do. But what I noticed was I was kind of over-dramatizing my feelings. And I my feelings became my guide. I believed them. I completely collapsed into them. And so I was like, well, I can't see clients today. I just don't feel well enough. And of course, that isn't great for business if you know, I've had a lot of chronic pain. I certainly have had chronic headaches all my life. And if I gave in to those feelings all the time, well, I'm not sure I would have much of a business at all. And at some point, and I don't remember exactly how this unfolded or how quickly it happened. I don't think it was overnight, but I started realizing that the thing I love most about my business, the very thing that gives me the most pleasure, the most joy, the most thrill is the work, the actual face-to-face work with my clients. And what I noticed was that when I started just having my sessions, regardless of how I felt, that it's like everything dropped away and I was just there, just present with my clients. And so when we hopped on this call this morning, I said to you, well, I know that once you and I start riffing, I'll be just fine. Because now I have kind of proven that to myself, as I haven't canceled things just because I don't feel well, but I show up and I hop on these calls or I hop on with a client and I just, it's kind of miraculous. Like, I'm aware right now that I don't feel well, but it does not in any way consume me. It doesn't keep me from being present with you and with our audience. It's just sort of, well, those sensations are just more neutral. It's as if I don't have this story about what those sensations mean for me and what I must do for them or that I must do anything with them. And so I'm able just to hop on and be here with a bad headache, with a cricked shoulder, with a poorly functioning computer, and just be here and just be here. And so I don't cancel stuff anymore. I mean, unless, you know, obviously if I'm really, really sick and coughing terribly and things like that. I mean, it does make sense, but I've found that I can work through so much more than I ever thought. Not in a difficult way, not in a, you know, just do it kind of a way, but in an easy way, in a flowing way.
Oh, that's just amazing. And I mean, it sounds a bit like you're saying that the sensations fade a bit into the background. Would that be a way of talking about it? I'm fascinated by it. I'd love to hear you talk more about it.
They definitely do fade. But what I think fades even more is my stories about it. So I don't really have this story about, oh, woe is me, or why is this happening to me now when I'm really need my energy, or, you know, or all those kinds of stories that I sometimes create about it. And so when I don't attach the stories or some made up meaning, if you will, to the sensations of not feeling well, then it's just easy to be with them. It's easier to be with them. It's not a stressful thing to be with them. They're just there. Like I feel the sensation strongly right now, but I also am feeling joy about being connected to you and riffing on realness here. And that, because that's just so much fun to me. And so while my energy is definitely lower, which I know you can tell and the listeners may feel as we go through this episode, still I'm present and still I'm enthusiastic and I'm enjoying it. And I may collapse right after we get off the phone. I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like quite, when you say I can feel the sort of joy, and it feels like a quiet joy, you know, not a racy joy. Mm-hmm. And alongside, you know, even though you say your energy is a bit lower, it doesn't feel any less connected, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious too. I was in a conversation recently, and we were both musing. So, what is it, or why is it that we don't feel comfortable showing up exactly as we are? And I just want to say, Carla, I really appreciate that about you. That to me, you know, when we get on a call together, you tell me exactly how it is. You know, the mask is not there. But we were musing on, you know, why is it that in so many situations, not just work, but maybe in our relationships or if you're a parent, why is it so difficult to say, I feel lousy? And I'd really love to explore that with you, because there's something for me around this, what you're saying about the stories we tell ourselves. And other than that clean idea of just, I feel bad, you know? Mm-hmm. So what do you see there?
Well, one of the things, you know, is that what I used to do was just totally collapse into it and then not show up at all. But there are other types, like my partner is the exact opposite. It does not matter if she's on her deathbed, she's going to go do things when really she needs to rest and recover. So they're two, you know, they're these extreme sort of collapsing into doing nothing, or collapsing into the expectations and obligations that we feel in this culture. I think that many people do collapse into one of those two extremes, when really it's more about getting grounded and coming to our center and finding out, you know, what is needed in this moment. Like this morning, I am not sick enough not to show up on this call. You know, if I had the flu and I needed to be in bed, then I would need to be in bed, but I wouldn't need to push through and do that. And quite honestly, I forgot what your original question is, Juliet.
I think there were several bits to it. But I love that two extremes. And I recognize that as well. The push through, regardless, you know, do not admit to feeling unwell or off or bad. There's things to be done, got to do them, you know, and that's a particular energy, like you say. And I also relate to the woe is me. I love how you said that, you know, I can't do this and I can't do that. And what I was noticing and what you said earlier is that when you go on a call anyway, you're not pushing or suppressing. You said it feels easy And I think that's a really important distinction, because both the collapsing into the woe is me of feeling ill or bad, and the pushing through regardless, as you say, even if you're on your knees, they feel costly in energy. Mm-hmm. They feel like there's a real harsh, you know, fight with yourself, you know, at both ends of that spectrum. And I love the feeling of ease you're referencing, because I'm wanting to really explore this a little more, because I think it's very easy for us to hear either you should carry on regardless of how you feel, you know, or you should always listen to your feelings and, you know, lie down the minute you feel bad. And you're not saying either of those, mm-hmm. which I really love. So that, talking about that ease, I have a question then for you. Do you think it affects the intensity of your symptoms, where you just show up and you get into a call, you know, you get into conversation? Would you say, you said you can still feel your symptoms, they're still present to you, but does it have any impact on the intensity?
I think it does. I mean, I think that there are moments when I completely forget about them altogether. Mm-hmm. So I know I have chronic headaches. I've had them. My mother says I started when I was 6. I have a headache every single day, all day long. And mm-hmm. I have for at least, you know, 54 years, maybe longer. That's when my mother started recognizing them. And I've been to all the doctors. I've done all the things. And the thing about my headaches that is really interesting is that I just don't have, at this point, I've had them for so long, I really just don't have much of a story about them. I don't feel like, you know, what's wrong with me? I mean, I've been through that, but, you know, what's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? Or why can't these doctors help me? Or, you know, all of those things. I really just don't have much of a story about them. And they do not in any way interfere in my day, unless they're really bad. If they're really bad, then I need to slow down and maybe go take a nap or whatever. But for the most part, you know, I can have a horrible headache and then get involved in something, whether it be, you know, a ride in the car somewhere or a talk with a friend, and I can literally completely forget about it in the moment. What's interesting is about 20 years ago, I developed a condition called chronic myofascial pain, and it's excruciating pain in your body, or it can be. It's not excruciating, but I was in horrible pain to the point of almost being disabled at one point. And I had quite the story about that. Like, for whatever reason, I had this really negative story about that pain. Like, just like I felt like a victim. I felt all these things. And I had a really painful story about it. And that, I believe, increased my feelings of pain and suffering. And over the years, you know, I came to a different place with that, and I'm now almost completely healed from that. But what made it like unbearable really was the story about it, was the story I had about it, how it shouldn't be happening, or there's something wrong with me, or guilt that I had abused my body in certain ways when I went through some things, you know, over 20 years ago. And the story is what kept just fueling it, and I think even making it worse. And so, yeah, the meaning we make about these sensations, I look at my dog, Pedro, who just went through back surgery. He all of a sudden one day just collapsed. He was completely paralyzed. He was in excruciating pain, and he had to have emergency surgery. But I have to tell you, it was clear to me that he never went into a painful story. Yes, he was in physical pain, but he was calm. He was grateful. You know, he even had moments of wagging his tail in the midst of what was clearly excruciating pain. And he's like my teacher. He doesn't have these painful, painful stories about physical pain. It's just what's happening, and he does the best he can to deal with it and to mitigate it, but he does not go into a suffering story about it.
Wow, that's really, That's really significant, isn't it? On any feeling state we find ourselves in, it's very sort of evident, because physical pain feels like it's, you know, a thing, it's objective. But at another level, we know, I mean, what I'm hearing there is, you know, sometimes you're not aware, it leaves your awareness, you know, as you said, when you're engaged. And then the more story we have, possibly, you know, that keeps us, I guess, if nothing else, it keeps us very focused on the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, it's curious to wonder how much it also intensifies it. And it made me think, again, another conversation that I was having where we were talking more about feeling states, but the idea of being at ease, like Pedro, with any feeling state that comes through. Because it, in that case too, isn't that where we often get caught in more, we get caught and maybe get stuck, and we certainly suffer when the feeling is sort of overlaid with this, you know, judgment really, that I mm-hmm. shouldn't be feeling like this. Or if I feel like this, it means I'm this kind of person. I'm weak, I'm pitiful, I'm, you know, I'm not robust, I'm not grateful, I'm not, whatever story we're running. I had an interesting experience yesterday. I've had 4 days of feeling very, very tender. And I took myself off to the far western tip of the UK, of Wales, yesterday to a beautiful beach, which is down a bit of a walk. And I didn't really want company. And as I was driving to and fro, I mean, I had a lovely time. I walked and I swam, but I just felt melancholy. I could really feel, as I was driving back, I was listening to music, and there was a time in my life when I would have said that visiting the sea and the coast was absolutely, would always make me feel better. And that was a time perhaps when I couldn't go a lot, and I didn't live as I do now by the water. But it was so clear to me that I'd had a lovely time, but it wasn't, the coast was neither making me melancholy, nor was it, did it have the power to make me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a point on the journey home when I just had this thought, well, what if it's okay? I'm just feeling melancholy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you often talk about this, that acknowledgement, but it was even more of sort of, and what if that's exactly what I'm supposed to be feeling on this drive home? And there was a sense of something shifted in that moment. It was almost a feeling of surrender,
mm-hmm.
not collapsing, the lovely word you use often. It didn't have a story. It was just, oh, my heart feels heavy today.
And did that feel, give you sort of a feeling in the midst of those melancholy feelings of like peace and groundedness?
Well, it was interesting because what happened, it hung around a bit longer. And then I was on a call with my partner later, and I was still feeling a bit heavy. And then there came a point in the conversation when I realized I didn't feel heavy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, I love him dearly, Paul, but I wouldn't say it was because of our conversation or what we were talking about. It was as if, you know, like, you know, someone had left the room. The melancholy had just left the room. And I hadn't even noticed it leave. So then, yes, there was a feeling of lightness. So it wasn't immediate. It was a couple of hours later.
Yeah, you know, I think of just, it's like you did not collapse into the melancholy. You acknowledged it. You allowed it. There was the surrender, not the collapsing. The surrender is, I think of as acceptance. You accepted that it was there. You did not make it a problem. You didn't get overly attached to it. You didn't move into it. You didn't take up residence in it. You just allowed for it. And in its own time, it moved through, just like the clouds in the sky, the storms move through. We can't stop them from coming. We can't make them go any faster. But as we accept them and kind of hunker down, if you will, then they just in their own time move through, and they're not a problem. I love that. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of how it feels. And now this morning, I did a little bit of collapsing into the feelings of not feeling well. My dog was bothering me, which you know how much I adore him and how very rarely he bothers me, but he was very needy this morning for some reason. I was trying to get some work done and I was allowing myself to get a little bit revved up and agitated. Yeah, it's really interesting that when we fight against it, it actually increases all of that. It feeds that. It's like seeding a cloud, you know, to make it more dense and heavier. But when we just allow it and don't take it too seriously, don't take it too personally, then in its own time, when we don't know when that is, it will move through. We don't have to worry about that or believe that this is the way it's going to be forever, which sometimes I think we can go into that place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you really raised it before, you know, this, you know, what if we could be at ease with whatever we're feeling? And my experience of that is it's not being at ease or not being at ease. It's much more subtle. You know, I go in and out of sort of, you know, I don't want to feel like this. Why do I feel like this? You know, just like you're saying this morning, you got caught up. And that's this, me too. And I think, you know, over these 4 days, you know, I got into a place of, you know, for me, when if I'm feeling distressed, I tend to want to, you know, close in and keep away from people. That will be my thing. I'll withdraw, you know, whereas some people want to really reach out and connect when they feel distressed. And so I sort of looking back over the 4 days, it's just very, I'm very grateful that the understanding that's known as the three principles, I think the impact for me of seeing deeper into that has been more ease, not all the time, but more ease with how I'm feeling. And you've talked about this as well, Carla, of coming out of things quicker, of not collapsing, not, I love the word dwell, take up residence in, not doing that. And so, and what's come along with that is I think I'm more awake to the subtleties of how I'm feeling. I kind of have more awareness in a way that's helpful. So I was telling you, I had an upgrade on my phone, which is now will not connect to my router. And I think it's going to need to be reset. And when that came in on yesterday, I think it was, that I upgraded it, I sort of took one look at this and thought, oh no, I just have not got capacity to even begin to get my head around what I might need to do. Whereas normally, you know, finding out tech things, if I have time, I quite like it. I find it quite fun to problem solve with things like that. And it was a real sort of signal to me, okay, well, it looks like this right now. And I guess I feel very fortunate that I have the awareness now. It's not always going to look like this. It looks like this right now. Mm-hmm. So that was the day. I mean, it was Sunday and I took myself off to the coast. It didn't need to be dealt with in that minute. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it bursting into tears when the router wouldn't connect. I mean, talk about a high grade problem, you know. And so I appreciate that there's ease both sides. So like you were saying, there are times when you will take to your bed. This was not the moment to try and wrestle with Google searches on how to make my router talk to my new my upgraded phone. And there's a gentleness and a kindness now where I think, you know, in the past, I probably still wouldn't have been able to solve the problem, but I would have been worrying and fussing with it and mm-hmm. and try, do you know what I mean, and hitting a brick wall with it and feeling more and more exhausted about it.
Well, a part of what it sounds like you did was drop the illusion of urgency. Like I think that I know one of the things I run into with my entrepreneurial clients is they have this sense of urgency about things that really aren't urgent. And when you are ramped up in an urgent state, your body is not meant to live in that state. It's meant to go in that state when there's imminent danger. You know, and I think of the story of the antelope on the savannah. Have I told that story in one of these episodes? I tell this story to my clients all the time. It's just such a good story. You know, you watch the antelope on the savannah who's grazing, very relaxed and aware, relaxed and alert, relaxed and aware, relaxed and alert. And all of a sudden, the tiger jumps out from the bush, and all of a sudden, the antelope system floods with cortisol and all those good chemicals and all of that good stuff that floods the antelope's body so that it can just sprint, and the chase is on. The chase is on. And then for whatever reason, the tiger veers off and leaves the antelope alone. Within minutes, this is the part that's just amazing to me. Within minutes, that antelope is back to grazing, relaxed and aware, relaxed and alert. That's how the system is designed. It's designed that way. It's not designed to get amped up and stay amped up. But humans get amped up and they stay amped up. And then we wonder why we suffer from so much depression and anxiety. And the truth is the system, our bodies, our system is just not meant to stay in that hyper alert place of believing there's imminent danger everywhere you turn. And the difference between us and the antelope, and we're animals too. You know, this is our system is actually the same as the antelope's, but what I believe the difference is that the antelope doesn't create some vast meaning and story about it and about the tiger. And it doesn't live anywhere but in the present moment. So when, you know, that antelope knows there are lions out there, lions and tigers, it's not like it forgets that they're, no, that's why it's alert. That's why it's aware. But it's also relaxed. It knows its system needs to relax. It knows its system needs to rest. And it knows, too, that it could die. You know, it's not, it knows that. And it also completely trusts that its system is going to do what it needs to do in the moment of imminent danger. So it doesn't have this story when the antelope is grazing. It's not sitting there going, well, I wonder at what time the lion's going to jump out next. Or, you know, I wonder, gosh, this last one was so bad, I barely had enough energy to get away from it. Will I have enough this time? I doubt I will. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then be this hyper, hyper alert and making all this meaning, you know, why me? Why is the lion always after me? And I know the lion is going to get me. You know, and this is what we as humans do. We're constantly reaching into the past. We're constantly projecting into the future. And we're almost anywhere but the present moment, where in this moment, we're just fine. You know, that antelope in that moment is just fine. Will the lion kill it? Maybe. And that's the way of it, right? But it doesn't live in the fear of that. It doesn't live as a victim. But we humans do that, and we get ramped up about things that are not imminently dangerous.
And I love that. I haven't heard it. And as you say, the moment after the chase is ended, if it survived, the way it will just drop back into rest and relax. And I was thinking, as you were saying, if the antelope was there with all this commentary, you know, he'd be having a strong indigestion whilst trying to eat the grass.
That's exactly right.
The digestive system would be totally compromised by all those other, yes, you know, chemicals still swirling around. That's fascinating. I love that. And, you know, you said, and he may die. And something's come to me as well with one of our other episodes about existential dread. And, you know, maybe what's behind so much of these sort of, they almost feel like maladaptive behaviors, but I'm not going to say they are, because they're also what we're doing as human beings. You know, all this overthinking and everything else seems to be an adaptation that we've developed to quite, you know, we've become experts actually as a race, as, and maybe more so in some cultures than others. But I do wonder that, you know, this whole the things you were saying there, you know, living in the past and the future, overthinking, you know, it all seems to come from this idea of, you know, that we have to protect ourselves. Which is, when you think about it, like the antelope, you know, if the lion is right there in front of you, You know, we have a system that will react. It doesn't mean we'll definitely outrun the lion, but we do have, you know, the biochemical system to be able to respond, right? Freeze, flight, whatever it is, fight, flight, freeze. And I wonder whether so much of the sort of overdrive that goes on is kind of like an ego running amok, thinking that it's immortal, thinking that its job is to survive and protect itself, you know, not really acknowledging that, you know, death comes to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, the ego operates in this other realm where that doesn't really compute that there would be an end mm-hmm. to it. And yeah. So some of the behaviors that look a bit kind of distorted, or where we lose perspective, and we both talked about getting really, you know, riled about what are, you know, relatively speaking, small problems. I'm just curious about that. Is that the ego just completely losing, yeah, not having any sense of being part of a body that will come to an end, you know?
Could be. I mean, I think we definitely do get overly identified with our ego. And you know, we know that we need our ego, but when we get so overly identified with it, I think that's when we, yeah, just can get so amped up and also feel this need to hide who we think we really are, because we're actually over-identified with our ego, which is not who we really are at our essence, innately, fundamentally. And so then we you know, we are trying to constantly put forth this idealized version of who we think we're supposed to be to everyone. And we have this fear of someone seeing us for who we are, which is, you know, messy, complicated, nuanced human beings. And in a way, we want to hide that from ourselves too, because it's kind of uncomfortable to live in such paradox.
I'm hearing again the work that all takes, you know, the mental energy it uses, you know, and it's not as if when you really start to investigate who we think we are, that's not a fixed thing either. We know that we have, it's not one mask. I mean, speaking for myself, I have loads of different ones mm-hmm. to choose from, depending where I am, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it is lovely to begin to realize, you know, it's such a relief to begin to drop those masks and to, you know, to just show up as we feel in the moment. And I think one of the things that really helps to do that is that, as you often say, when you get feelings kind of in perspective, as in they are just how you're feeling, they're not who you are, you know, then they don't matter so much. And it's back to that idea of ease. And whereas if how you feel, if you believe that's telling you what kind of person you are, or how capable you are, or how likable you are, or how lovable you are, then your how you feel is going to matter an awful lot. Mm-hmm. And then it makes sense that you would be trying like crazy to manage those feelings really, really hard. And we've both experienced how that has the absolute opposite effect. Mm-hmm. You know, the more you try to manage your feelings and force yourself to, you know, say you shouldn't feel this and you must feel that, and I just keep getting that sense, it's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, I think it is absolutely exhausting, and it keeps you from being able to have that fresh thought, you know, that new thought, that more interesting thought. I think it keeps you in a bit of a spiral.
Yeah. And you know, there can be, I love that you brought in the fresh thought, because there can be such treasure in a showing up as we are and being at ease with that and then seeing what comes. And I had a beautiful example of this last week. I run a weekly group session, which is a sort of slightly book club format. And I normally open the session with my partner, Paul. We have a few words between us. And this time we'd done a quick check-in around the group and we'd asked everyone to do a short, very short check-in. And it came to me and I said, well, this week I've really struggled to keep my train of thought. You know, things arise and then I completely lose what I'm wanting to say. And I think last recording I shared that with you. Mm-hmm. Just in case I just literally kind of stopped and went quiet. But I also said on that call, you know, maybe it's a signal to me to stop talking so much, you know, sort of laughing. But, and I actually was very quiet on the call. And in listening even more, it ended up being an extraordinarily deep experience for me personally on the call. But I could see, you know, it was such a beautiful thing to see that the depth of connection amongst everybody on the call was not dependent on me, as I put it, being able to hold my train of thought and being, you know, maybe I prize that, you know, being able to speak fluently or whatever. So it was such a beautiful learning for me that, wow, this call's gone really deep and there was very few words certainly coming from me, you know.
Well, what I find interesting about that is, you know, in thinking, you know, I'm kind of thinking about how I show up on calls with you or with clients when I'm not feeling well. And I think underneath it all, I have a belief, and it sounds like you, this is, I may be putting words in your mouth, so you tell me, but it sounds to me like you and I, it's like I have a fundamental understanding when I remember that it's not all up to me. You know, it's like I can trust you to hold the space with me here. It's not all up to me to make this thing go, you know, and it's not all up to me in my sessions with my client. This is something that my client, it's a co-creative dance I'm in with my clients. And it's not just up to me and my client or me and you. Life is also holding me. I mean, there's this idea that I can just show up and be authentic and be real and not have to hide, but also not have, you know, not have to overperform or underperform. I can just show up and just be where I am, knowing that it's just not all up to me. You know, I don't have to hide all of this. It's not all up to me. And that gives me a level of just, you know, just trust and calm. And it's like if all of a sudden I stop talking for the rest of the remainder of this episode, I just know that you'll jump in and take it. I just know it. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I'm not usually short of things to say.
So, neither one of us, I think, are.
That's absolutely true. And I love that you pointed to, when you said co-creation and you pointed to life, or, you know, whatever we want to call that, that there's you, there's the client, or there's you and me here. But there is also something else at play. And what strikes me too is that when we feel a bit off, you know, maybe this is where the treasure is, it's easier to see that there's something else at play when we don't feel on top form. Because when we do feel on top form, we tend to take the credit.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So I wonder there if that's where the gift is.
Maybe so. Yeah. Well, unless you, if you do collapse, then you can feel like that which we don't really have a name for, life, God, universe, spirit, mystery, whatever, is against us. You know, so I think when we either absolutely collapse or we're riding high on our accomplishments or whatever, I think it maybe is a little more challenging to see that it's not all up to us or it's not all against us.
Yeah. It brings to mind that famous line from the Kipling poem, you know, treat those two imposters just the same. It's about, I can't remember the exact line before, it's about if you win or lose at a game of, you know, cards, or it's not cards, but pitch and toss or something like that. And winning or losing, treat those two imposters just the same. And I think what you're pointing out there is very interesting, that it's funny, just today I've had conversations where you know, you're saying, even as I'm saying one thing, it makes sense at one level, and then at another level, it doesn't make sense. So that's happening right now. So what I was going to say was those examples you gave of, you know, the sort of poor me collapsing, it's terrible, life's against me, or, you know, look at me, I'm a winner, aren't I fantastic? Those two extremes, they sound and feel like, you know, ego completely being in the front seat of the car, which mm-hmm. we've referenced on other shows. But at another level, I'm beginning to realize that even when we can't see it, you know, even in those times, say when we collapse, and all those times when we get really het up about something which later looks minor, I wonder, you know, I really wonder about that, because my sense is I'm always going in and out of, you know, more or less sort of, I don't know what word I want to use, maybe equilibrium, I'll use that word for now. Mm-hmm. And I think while I see that as a problem, and that I should always be back in equilibrium, it creates a tension and a resistance, if you know what I mean. And so I'm beginning to get curious that what's there, you know, that we can't see even in the times we've collapsed, or we're aware that other people are collapsed. Mm-hmm. And the real theme that has been running through all since last week is this extreme gentleness that we touched on. Mm-hmm. Because when we bring that to ourselves in particular, but to anybody else, I don't know, something rather kind of marvelous begins to happen. Mm-hmm. I think I was saying to you before we hit record, it's when you bring extreme gentleness for its own sake, not in order to get some kind of result.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that up, because I think people believe, and I certainly have believed this, and sometimes I still do, and I certainly my clients believe it, is that, you know, once you get really healthy and know who you are and figure all this out, that then you're going to pretty much stay at that, in that state of equilibrium. And I always have to tell them and myself, no, that's not how it works. And there has to be a real acceptance of the nature of being human in this world of form. It is a roller coaster, and it's not going to change. No matter how well we're doing, we're still going to have the highs and the lows. And as Pema Chodron says, things are going to come together and fall apart and come together and fall apart. So I think this place of practicing extreme gentleness is a wonderful thing to leave our listeners with today as we come to the end of our time, that that extreme gentleness, especially as we're living through a pandemic and social unrest and political unrest, extreme gentleness for ourselves and for one another is a perfect way to end this episode today about, you know, what to do, what to do when you're not feeling well. Because I know a lot of people aren't feeling well right now for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful place to end. I don't think you can go wrong, can you, with extreme gentleness?
Thank you, Juliet.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Riffing on Realness podcast with Carla Royal and Juliet Fay. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and share with a friend. We would truly appreciate it if you'd rate and review this podcast, which will help others find us. You can visit me, Carla, at carlaroyal.com. I am a mindset and performance coach working with high-achieving, high-performance entrepreneurs and business owners who are quietly dealing with too much mental chatter and anxiety. Juliet loves freedom of mind, which she explores and shares through poetry and conversations. Find her at soulcare.org. That's soulcare, SOLCARE.org. We'll see you next time on Riffing on Realness.